Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to On the Line. We're at a new time this week and carrying on to the rest of the week throughout this semester. So thanks for joining us on Wednesday night. Very, very special episode for you guys tonight. We have a UC Berkeley College Republican joining us for the first time. He's a lone conservative contributor, Daily Wire contributor. Bradley, how are you doing tonight?
Hi, I'm doing great. Super excited to be on. Thanks for having me.
All right, awesome. And also joining us, as always, my good friend Rob Sasso.
Hey, Alec, great to be on, as always.
So we're just going to jump straight in. Berkeley College Republicans, you guys are like the rock stars of, you know, the College Republican kind of conservative movement, bringing speakers to campus. And kind of all of the craziness on your campus started off with this Milo event back in February. There's, you know, Fox News covered it for almost 2 hours. There was helicopters in the air, riots, the city was on fire. So give us kind of a real quick rundown, kind of your view of what that whole event was like. Because you were inside the building, correct?
Yeah, I was locked in the building called Poly Ballroom, which is the second floor of the Martin Luther King Jr. Student Center. And this actually takes you a little bit back to November 8th. Before November 8th, I had worn my Republican shirt on campus. Two strangers walked up to me, called me a racist and a bigot without engaging in any conversation, and kept going on their merry way. I was just stunned. I come from a conservative part of Southern California. I had always been celebrated for limited and small government points of view, worked previously with state senators. And it was just a complete shock to me. And it moved on to November 8th. And one of my good buddies, who has since transferred to the University of Virginia, was punched in the face at a pizza parlor for being excited about Donald Trump getting elected. So what you see in the hyper-liberal Bay Area is a radicalization and a hyper-groupthink that emboldens Antifa, emboldens violence, emboldens political violence, and February 1st was the first time we saw that acted out on a large scale. I volunteered for that event. I was trying to get more involved in the club. It was the second semester. I felt a little bit less stressed from my first semester as a college student. I volunteered to check people in. I was the last volunteer ushered in. 30 seconds later, two SWAT members or police members in riot gear with riot shields grabbed me, Troy Warden, and Peter, two other members of the club at the time, and usher us inside. After we closed the glass door, two M80 fireworks went off right behind us where we were standing. Antifa had just arrived in black block garb. There was about 200 of them. I forget the exact number, but there was a lot of them. And we were standing within the door, inside the door. They were making their way to the barricade. A police officer then looked at me and said, "You guys need to get behind the brick wall." Two more fireworks went off right in front of the glass doors where we were just standing. From that point on, we were ushered up into the second story, locked inside of the Poly Ballroom with around 60 or 40 to 60 armed police officers in riot gear. Since they all locked themselves inside, Antifa started to assault the Trump supporters outside. Some of them were planning on seeing Milo. Others just wanted to check out the surrounding area. They tore down the barrier. They broke the windows of the first floor. They lit a standing light on fire, which then caught a tree on fire. And then the building was damaged in that process. It was about an hour and a half later. Time seemed to fly by. It was a really, really strange scenario. The police officers basically said, "Okay, we've secured the west side of the building. We're going to open up the door for you. You guys are going to walk out together, and you guys are going to try to make it home safe. No police escort, just an open door, go down the stairs, and try to get home safe." So we all went down the stairs in a group. There was about 12 of us. Some individuals who were Antifa sympathizers or Antifa themselves started yelling, "You're scum, Berkeley College Republicans, Nazis die, fascist pigs bleed, you deserve to bleed." We quickly started walking faster and faster away, and we all had to split up, made it safely back, and I saw Milo on Fox News talking to panelists and talking to Tucker Carlson. And the next day I'm waking up to one arrest and $100,000 worth in damage on school property alone. The violence warranted so much more than what the police were willing to do and what the police did. And the Berkeley mayor actually authored a stand down statement for the Berkeley police. And that only emboldened Antifa further, as we saw time go on in early portion of 2017.
Now, Bradley, one thing that Antifa would like to use as an excuse here is that Milo's rhetoric is very inflammatory and that his speech is what kind of caused this. Now, do you think this was a result of Milo coming, or would any Republican or any conservative pundit that came require the same response from Antifa?
Yeah, Antifa makes a lot of excuses for the insipid views they hold. I would say this. Look at David Horowitz's event that was scheduled a month after the Milo event. It was canceled because the university got scared. Look at Ann Coulter's. It was canceled because the university got scared. Look at the issues we've had in booking Ben Shapiro. This is what Antifa does on purpose to scare the living daylights out of our community in order to forward their agenda. Milo never directly called for violence against anyone. Doctrine is directly responsible for violence when it calls it. Is Milo a provocateur? Is Milo a political commentator that is trolly? Absolutely. But that does not advocate violence perpetrated against anyone for holding a certain political viewpoint.
All right. Well, we're just going to go ahead and move on to the kind of next kind of event in the timeline. Actually, we're going to jump a little bit. Talk about the Battle of Berkeley for a second, as it has been famously called now. Really just kind of a strange circumstance that we actually have two political groups. You could technically say on the far ends of the political spectrum, but it's probably more accurate to say they're both far left for the most part. Just happen to be fighting about different things. You weren't there personally, but you said you had friends there, right?
Yeah, I was told to stay away by family, friends, and council, saying that this isn't a safe event. People are going to get hurt, and people did get hurt. 13 arrests, the amount of arrests increased, but the violence perpetrated was immense. Look up pictures from that April afternoon, and you'll see people with Trump supporting shirts, with gun right shirts, absolutely bloodied, ears bleeding from M80 fireworks being thrown at them, cuts, large gashes in their faces from Antifa members hitting them in the head with pipes, Antifa members charging at them, trying to maim them, really. I mean, these people mean business, and they are completely fine. They will own up to the fact that they believe you do not have a place in society. They believe that you should be dead. Anyone with your ideology should be dead because you are a direct threat to me. And I think that is absolutely insane. It's a break of this civil covenant that we hold together in a civilized society. And the police need to do a much, much better job enforcing that covenant on both sides of the aisle, for the individuals who perpetrated violence in retaliation, and the Antifa members who incited it.
Now, Bradley, you mentioned a lot of horrific events that occurred on campus. Now, just a regular day on campus and you're walking down, do you feel threatened or feel dangerous? It feels dangerous in any way to be on Berkeley's campus as a Republican or as a conservative, or is it just reserved for these crazy Antifa folks that come on whenever a conservative comes to speak?
No, Antifa members are within the student body. Antifa members are tabling, what we call tabling, which you're displaying your club, you're displaying your views on the main plaza. We're a very political active school, and I'm glad that we are. But when I have an organizer, her name is Yvette Falarca, who was arrested this summer and then let go on bail, I believe. She was arrested for inciting violence and inciting riots in Sacramento. She tables every day for the DAAP, which is and BAM or an organization. So the DAAP is the Affirmative Action Party on Cal's campus, and BAM is by any means necessary student group. She has openly said on local news channels, which I have tuned into, and said the left needs to be more violent, more militant against Nazis like BCR. BCR was holding our meeting in a spring semester in a small classroom with 60 individuals inside of it. Two doors down, by any means necessary's headline speaker was Yvette Falarca, and they were sitting in a circle talking about how they need to get rid of the right on campus, that the Bay Area has no place for Berklee College Republicans, has no place for conservatism, has no room for differing ideologies. And they will put flyers that espouse these views all over campus. They graffiti in the bathrooms. They're three arrow design. If you've ever seen the Antifa logo, they do the flag and they do the three arrows facing down on the toilets, on the sinks, wherever they can get away with it.
Really disturbing. I didn't actually know that they get tabled at your events. I mean, free speech is one thing, but I think people that advocate or perform violence like that, that's just a line that I think should not be crossed.
I mean, it makes them undoubtedly responsible when you're directly calling for that violence. That's why the right has been up in arms about radical Islamic terror for, you know, since earlier than 2001, earlier since 9/11. There is no room for ideology, for ideologies that espouse specific violence against another person. And that's why free speech laws are so concise and so purposeful in that. It has to be a genuine threat or targeted harassment that could instill reasonable fear within a person. And that's from Nadine Strossen of NYU Law. I mean, these are incredibly specific things, and the police need to enforce the law.
So another event that you guys had scheduled was the Ann Coulter speaking event. You guys didn't organize the any events during the Battle of Berklee. That was just a random pro-Trump event that was rudely interrupted. But Ann Coulter tried to come to campus, didn't work out due to security threats. Kind of a question I want to pair onto, just like I want to get your kind of take on all of this going on, is are the police regularly getting stand down orders from the mayor or from the college? How is that working?
Absolutely. The mayor has been completely in support of leftist violence. There was an individual who was arrested with a knife and graffitied half the town in anti-white, anti-cop graffiti, and was arrested and was going to be charged for hate crime. Later, the district attorney dropped that hate crime charge. Previously, this individual has espoused his views on Facebook, and the mayor, in response, said, "I support you. I will look into this issue for you," and things like that. He issued the stand down order on February 1st and called Milo alt-right, racist, bigoted. You know, throw all the buzzwords that the left likes to use in there. He called them all of them. There was another great quote that he gave in canceling Free Speech Week, which is coming up. He said, "I don't want Berklee to be used as a punching bag. I'm concerned that these groups are going to bring large protests that cause mayhem. It's something we've seen in Oakland and in Berklee." And he's very, very concerned about Berklee being used as a punching bag. But when you continually disempower your law enforcement, you continually make them retreat when they're armed with rubber bullets, when they've set up perimeters, you embolden these organizations. And he's been in open support of them. And that's why I wrote an open letter to the mayor of Berklee, and it was published on Lone Conservative. I mean, it's really, really important to call out your municipalities when they're trying to forward an agenda and risking public safety.
Now, when Ann Coulter got canceled, I remember their first excuse was definitely that they weren't going to be able to keep people safe. And that was in regards to the police. And my question to you is basically, when you look at fascism, it's not really the government coming in and silencing speech. It's that the government pulls away their protection of people, and then the rioters come in and the heckler's veto is issued when people can't feel safe because there's no one to protect them. Now, does that describe what goes on in Berklee, or is it actually the government coming in?
Rob, I think you're exactly right on that. You hit it right on the head. It's a miniature version of the Weimar Republic. It's the Reds and the Brown Shirts, a recreation of the Reds and the Brown Shirts, the Brown Shirts being the emboldened alt-right after all this is happening, and said the only response that we can have in response to the left's violence is more violence. And the Reds, which are Antifa, perpetrating violence on a mass scale in order to fight back against what they think is an establishment, what they think is a history of white supremacy. And yes, succumbing to the heckler's veto and not enforcing the law is absolutely the worst thing that the university can do in this case. And actually, the courts have been incredibly clear on this. In testimonies in the Supreme Court and dictas in the Supreme Court, that more speech is actually the answer to hate speech. That more speech will create counters to these views and realize that these views are actually insane. The fact that the alt-right espouses a view saying race is inherently tied to creed, that's insane. The only way you can do it, the only way you can combat that effectively is to put it, is to attack it on a pedestal, is to attack it with more speech. Analyze their arguments and prove them wrong. When you shut someone down, it only emboldens their movement. There was a politician in France, I believe it was. He was a municipal guy running for some small position, but he had a bunch of racist, bigoted views, and the government kept shutting him down, saying, you know, you can't hold this event, you can't say this, you can't say that. And all the people are like, well, why is the government so afraid of what he's going to say? So he gained a following through that. And then all of a sudden, when the government stopped, pulled it away and said, fine, you can have your events, you have a public following, whatever. When they finally gave him that platform and he espoused those views, his whole base went, this guy's crazy. And they left him, and he was there to, his political career just rotted away. And that, I think, is something that we should model in our own municipalities, that sunlight is the best disinfectant to Antifa's violence, to the alt-right, to the KKK, to the neo-Nazis, to everyone who threatens the civil covenant that we hold with one another.
All right, awesome. Something that kind of you were talking about before we came on and I'm really interested in is the Berklee College Republicans are preparing a lawsuit against the College of Berklee, potentially. I'm not really sure kind of where that's at, but I'd love to hear more about it. What you can tell us, of course, only. Where are you guys at with this lawsuit?
Well, the lawsuit, we're co-plaintiffs with YAF. YAF is a big sponsor of speakers on college campuses around the nation. They were funding Ann Coulter's speech at Berklee. They were funding they're funding Ben Shapiro's speech that's going to take place on September 14th at Berklee. And what happened was we fork out security fees, we fork out fees to the speaker and things like that. And the university stalls and the university does not reciprocate the access to these public facilities that they do with other individuals like Bernie Sanders, Justice Sotomayor, Vicente Fox. All these individuals had spoke on Berklee's campus in the past calendar year, and they were met with, you know, no security fees, embracement of love and tolerance and excitement. And Ben Shapiro was actually met with no security fees, not as much love and tolerance and excitement, but no security fees when he came and spoke in 2016. And so you have this dissonance is where the university says they want everyone to espouse their free speech, espouse their views through protecting the First Amendment rights, but then they deny you access to facilities. They charge you large security fees. They do a very, very good job in stalling your ability to speak. And that's what we're attacking at. This is institutional reform that will protect conservative students in the present, because we on the line is very, very well aware of students who are constantly harassed for their conservative viewpoints on campus and not allowed to espouse them. And in the future, this could be liberal students. In the 60s, it was liberal students. And so institutional reform is what we're going for. We're looking to protect the First Amendment rights for every American, granted that it's not genuine threats or direct harassment. And so I'm really excited. Our law team is great. They have been nothing but supportive in all of this. And it's definitely difficult dealing with a bunch of college kids on a national stage all of a sudden, because they're being hunted down by Antifa and hunted down by BAM and other organizations that want to see them physically harmed.
Now, Bradley, when you talk about this issue, it's very micro in the sense that you're working with your campus because your governor and mayor are refusing to enforce the law and your school is creating a impediment to your First Amendment rights. Now, in California, everyone sees it moving very far blue, very deep, deep blue. But is there a backlash when it comes to this lack of law and order where people on the right and even people in the center and not as far on the fringe left are coming together in this kind of law and order sense where maybe in the future elections you might see some people running on law and order like they did back in the late 60s?
I think we saw it in 2016. Donald Trump was the candidate of law and order. He repeated that point continuously. And what these people are ignorant of, they're incredibly ignorant of history. When the Reds fought the brown shirts, when the Reds fought Hitler's party, it pushed people into the arms of the Nazis. It pushed people, they said, we're going to have to take the Reds, the violent Reds, or we're going to have to take the violent Nazis. And they chose the violent Nazis. They chose the establishment. And what you're seeing in Berkeley is people are wanting to choose the establishment, but they have no establishment there to protect them. So what are they doing? They're moving towards more arming themselves, which we saw at the Battle of Berkeley. And we're trying to find, you know, more kids are signing up for Berkeley College Republicans than ever. We just had Welcome Week. I had 100 new emails that I just plugged into our system that I'm sending out. Our email list is 1,200 people. I have people being pushed to the center and pushed to the right because the left is so enthralled with its own views and enthralled with its own insanity, especially in Berkeley.
What you're saying right there is that's the greatest message for the right. If we basically just hold our arms open and we say, oh, we support free speech, say whatever you want, I think people just gravitate towards that because it's a message of leaving people alone, this small L libertarianism. And I think that it's really benefiting groups like you where you're kind of just being yourselves. You're not going out there and fighting back the way the left's fighting you. And I think that Berkeley Republicans have been really a beacon of hope for young conservatives. And I think that it's a lot of hope hearing you speak because it's not like this complaining. It's not this victim status that you want to prop up. It's this, we're going to fight this legally because we can win this legally. And also there's a cultural battle to win because people don't want to associate with these nuts who think that violence by any means necessary is required to get rid of people that just want to go to school and have an education.
I certainly appreciate calling us a beacon of hope. That means a lot. And we don't want to sound like victims because the victim here is society. It's civil society. The victim here could be conservatives in the future. It could be liberals in the future. It could be anyone of any political ideology or creed. And the ability to engage with one another is what our justice system is based on, is what our, the Bill of Rights is based on, is what the Constitution is based on, that people governing themselves, that people's own autonomy is the most important thing in this country. And the government has to stay out of that. But the government has the moral and legal obligation to protect it when individuals try to cheat the system within society and threaten others.
Now, real quick, before we kind of jump into Ben Shapiro, I just want to ask you, do you think Trump will follow through with kind of the threat he made back in February? He kind of tweeted out at Berkeley like, oh, if you're not going to support this free speech on campus, no federal funding.
Yeah, no federal funds. I don't think that that's going to come to fruition. I would love to see the California government, the California governor, Jerry Brown, to at least acknowledge the problem. He's been incredibly silent during this whole ordeal, and it's disgusting, and he should man up and do something about it. He should do something on the state level. Legislators should push for something on the state level to change if universities are not going to uphold their moral and legal obligations to protect their students, to protect their communities, and to protect everyone's rights. I wish I could see that pressure happening, and I wish I could see a movement towards defunding, but will it be feasible in California? No. And will the federal government probably follow through on it? I don't see a strong case for it. Let's put it that way.
Okay. So yeah, let's go ahead and move on to kind of the future events. You mentioned Ben Shapiro is having a speech on the 14th. It's coming up here real soon, about 2 weeks. And then later in the month of September, Milo Yiannopoulos is kind of kicking off his comeback tour at Berkeley with his Free Speech Week. A few big speakers, Steve Bannon just announced that he's coming. So first off, just kind of give us the rundown. What are you guys expecting with Ben Shapiro?
We're very, very excited for this event. The university has realized that they've done some horrible things to us in the past. Are they still difficult to deal with? Absolutely. They're still trying to stall ticket sales. They're still trying to give us the runaround in any way, shape, and form they can. However, they did pay the bill to host Ben Shapiro in Zellerbach Hall. Zellerbach Hall is a 2,000-person auditorium. I went there yesterday with a few members of the executive board of Berklee College Republicans, and we went through the logistics with Cal Performances, who is the organization that runs Zellerbach. And it will be a spectacle. It will be Ben on a huge stage with a bunch of people in the audience, and I'm really, really excited to get conservatives to come out from Southern California, from the Central Coast, from northward of us, and just really be able to hear this guy speak in a public setting. We're forking out a $15,000 security fee, or YAF and the NBCR is forking out a $15,000 security fee, and you know that's blatantly a taxation on your free speech. But we're wanting to do it in order to hold the event. We can challenge Berklee in court about their taxation on free speech later, but now we want to hold an event. We want to have conservative viewpoints aired in the Bay, because there is definite room for gains in the Republican Party.
Now, one thing that I love about YAF is that they always do this. They always go out full-fledged for anything. They are willing to support free speech, willing to support their members. It's why they're kind of my favorite group. I'm hoping to start one. But nevertheless, Ben Shapiro, he's basically been imploring on his podcast every day that no one comes violent in his name. Nobody comes looking for a fight. Everyone just comes looking to listen to his speech. Now, I feel that the left is in a really bad spot because Ben's not this crazy radical guy who's going to be espousing weird views. He's basically very mainstream in that they can end up boosting him into a humongous pedestal. They don't know what they're doing. So on that note, are they planning on anything? Have these clubs really stated that they're going to get violent when Ben comes, or is this just going to be a surprise that you're going to have to see on September 14th?
Well, I mean, we can look at a political pattern and blatantly see that Antifa is ready for violence at all times. Whenever the right steps up in the Bay Area, the Antifa is there to perpetrate violent acts and shut them down. So I'm expecting a riot. I'm expecting violence. Whether that will come from student organizations, I'm not sure. But they will come from Oakland. They will come from the bad parts of Berklee, and they will try to completely destroy our neighborhood. I'm anticipating that. I'm worried about that. But on the flip side of that, Ben Shapiro is the left's worst nightmare. That's why I love contributing to the Daily Wire. Thank you, James and Ben, if you're watching. Thank you for editing my pieces and putting them up. Because that's why I love working for him so much. He is a strong condemner of the alt-right. He receives 40% of the alt-right's anti-Semitic tweets on Twitter. And he is someone who believes in the individual. He believes in being empathetical, but still being conservative is a possibility. And you see a lot of liberals on Berklee's campus saying that, well, if you're conservative, you just don't feel the way I feel. You're not an emotional person. And I think that he's a great person to fight back with that. He can give you an empathetical argument and still give you facts that don't care about your feelings. And so if they decide to boost him onto a larger pedestal, I want the event to go by safely, but Ben on a large pedestal for the conservative movement is nothing but a good thing. But if anyone comes in the name of violence, don't come in the name of violence. Don't come to perpetrate acts of violence against Antifa, against me, against my club members. You're part of the problem, essentially, if you decide to do that.
Definitely. I agree with you. I mean, between Milo, if they ended up propping Milo up, which unfortunately for me, they didn't because of his actions besides that, event, so he didn't get propped up. But if this is what the left wants to prop up as Ben Shapiro is like the racist alt-right head of the conservative movement, but then he ends up just being the beacon that everyone wants to listen to because he's just common sense and he can gravitate towards a lot of young people, I think that this could just be a great way to springboard the conservative movement into another level. And I think that Berklee's sponsoring a good fight because I know that I'll be watching it over a live stream, and I think that it'll be very interesting to see what goes down because I feel like what's going on outside might be as interesting as what's going on inside.
Yeah, I don't know which one we're going to live stream, the outside shot or the inside shot. I completely agree with you. He deserves nothing but the best in pursuing his speech at Berklee. I'm excited to give him a pedestal. He's one of my icons, and I think that he can become an icon for a lot of kids in the Berkeley area who are fiscally conservative, a little bit more socially liberal, but curious about what small government and what limited government can do for pursuing your own social wants and needs.
So moving on to Free Speech Week, and kind of how Rob said that Ben Shapiro is like very rational, common sense. You have Milo coming in, kicking off where he's inflammatory purposefully. And he's bringing Steve Bannon in with him. I'm sure there will be a bunch of other kind of inflammatory people coming in. I'm sure a very, very wide range of people will be making an appearance that week. Are you guys just preparing for all-out war? What's kind of the mindset of the Berkeley College Republicans right now when it comes to Free Speech Week?
The Berkeley College Republicans aren't hosting Free Speech Week. That is through the Berkeley Patriot, which is a conservative publication. They're hosting Milo and Bannon and other conservatives because they believe that their free speech rights have been thwarted in the past and that we need to maintain these rights of free speech, that these people are allowed to espouse their views on the campus of UC Berkeley, no matter how repugnant you may find them to be. I am preparing for the worst. I think that everyone should prepare for the worst, given what happened in February. And since then, political violence is reactionary in nature, and Milo coming back could solicit a bigger response, and it's on the police officers, it's on the UCPD to enforce the law, to not issue stand down orders, to arrest and detain individuals who consistently engage in violence. And that will only lead to the betterment of Berkeley's political discourse. Getting rid of the bad apples only makes your harvest better.
Now, this is all tentative on Berkeley surviving Ben Shapiro coming, because we all know something might cause the campus to explode then. So let's say Free Speech Week ends up going on and that Berkeley doesn't shut it down, find some excuse. Now, we kind of been talking bad about the police, and I think that obviously they're given stand down orders. They have to obey their higher ups. Now, do you actually talk to the police? Like, do you feel that they're kind of being handcuffed? Do you think the police feel that they're abdicating their duty by not being able to serve their community the way that they've been taught to?
Oh, absolutely. It's the municipal government and the chief of police who are undermining the police officers, who are disempowering those officers, who are putting those officers in danger, because these individuals are emboldening the left. They're emboldening organizations like Antifa to go out and perpetrate violence like we saw on Sunday. They came even though the police had set up a perimeter. They had rubber bullets. They were ready to defend this park. And what happened? A stand down order. So now all the police officers are running in retreat. What does that look like? That puts police officers in harm's way. And it tells Antifa, you know what? You guys can show up and undermine us all you want. We will run away and we will put our officers in danger only to a certain extent. Then you can wreak havoc on the community. So it's definitely on the mayor. It's definitely on the city council. It's definitely on the chief of police. It's not on the guy walking the beat in South Berkeley. It's not the guy standing there with a riot shield, trying to protect the community. When he's given an order, he's designed to follow that order. My problem lies with the people giving those orders.
Yeah, I think that's pretty solid, and that's kind of the issue that we've been seeing coming out of California and other college campuses across the nation, is the administration is just real crap, and not much is being done to change that.
Absolutely.
So I think that's going to kind of wrap us up tonight. Bradley, thank you so much for joining us. Where can we find you online?
You can find me on Lone Conservative. You can find me on Twitter at Bradley Devlin, LeyDevlin. Follow me. That's my handle on basically every social media site. Add me on Facebook if you want to see some of my videos from Locked Inside Poly Ballroom. Those are all over my Facebook. So definitely check those out and keep an eye on the Daily Wire for any pieces by me.
All right, Rob, where can we find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Real Robert Sasso. I'm also the host of Campus Conservative. I just talked to Clay Spence of Occupy Democrats Logic. That was a really awesome conversation. So if you haven't listened, go give that a listen. It's a really fun conversation. And Bradley, thank you for coming on. It's good to see that you, Troy, and the rest of you guys at Berkeley College Republicans are not afraid to put your names out there and fight the good fight. So good luck come September 14th, and good luck for Free Speech Week as well.
All right. Once again, Bradley, thank you so much for joining us tonight. We wish you Godspeed and good luck when it comes to all this craziness happening the month of September. Good luck with Ben Shapiro. Hopefully that goes off really well. And please try and stay safe during Free Speech Week. I'm 100% sure that's going to be a real, real wild one. Battle of Berkeley Part 2, probably, for 3 whole days. So,
yeah. Yeah. Thank you so much for having us, having me on and representing BCR and conservatives across the country so well. Really appreciate all the work you guys do and look forward to keeping in touch.
All righty. Well, I am Alex Sears. You can find me on loneconservative.com and you can follow me on Twitter @SearsAL. Thank you all so much for tuning in. We will see you next week.